Good afternoon. You are listening to 91.9 FM, WDRT in Viroqua, Wisconsin. This is the Heart of Wellness Show with host Drs. Paul and Paula Grenier. Today's guest is Laura Poe Mathis, who is a dietitian and locally leads the Weston Price Foundation group that meets and has potlucks and things in this area. We're super excited to have Laura on the show today. You know, it's about our favorite topic, food. I mean, who doesn't eat food every day? At least three times a day, if you're that kind of but it's a big topic, right? Because we need it. We have to have it, at least at this level of our evolution. We need to have it. And it's a hot topic always. And we're excited to have you on board today because we're going to delve into some of the changes in the world around food in our country and understand what is good to eat and why. Paul was excited about this topic.
Well, it digs up some old graves. Like, like how did we get there in the first place?
Yeah.
Who created the pyramid? And I always thought the pyramid was pretty stupid.
I think Laura's going to give us a history lesson on where it really came from, so we can dig into that.
And how it's been, you know, manipulated in the money, the chemical world, and so this will be fun, and it's also a big deal, you know, that we might be waking up as a society, we're the sickest country in the world, and one of the richest and sickest and fattest for sure.
Weird combo.
We got some issues, and we definitely have it. Some of the regulations that are out there that have driven this food system. And some of the things that got thrown into the closet that need to come out again and put back on the shelf, put back on the table.
Here we go. You got people hanging on the edge of their seats now with that.
Yeah.
But before we get going, Laura, can you maybe just give us a little backdrop about you and why you're in the food world? What got you to being a teacher of food for people and all that?
Yeah, well, I've been a dietitian since 2009, which doesn't seem like that long ago, but it's starting to rack up some years.
It is. It is.
I went straight into dietetic school when I first went to college. So, you know, I was an athlete in high school and was, people in my family loved to cook. And so I got into health and nutrition and food at a pretty early age and figured out that's what I wanted to do kind of right away as I went to college. So I was one of the lucky ones who didn't change my major 20 times. So I've been a dietitian since 2009. So I've got to see the evolution of the dietary guidelines over those, what is that, almost 17 years. And I've been in a lot of different kind of veins when it comes to nutrition in my work. I've worked in hospitals and community settings and clinic settings and retail settings, and I've done catering and like private chef work. I've done, and, now I'm in private practice and have an online course. So I've tried it all. And I've also tried every, type of nutrition paradigm out there and to find which one I feel like is the truest and works the best for not only myself but for the most number of people. So I mean, it's veganism, great. I've tried it all, but
well, that's great.
A
wealth of experience, I would say. A wealth of experience. I like to say that I want to ask that question. You said you were an athlete and your family loved to cook, so you came from a cooking kind of background. Like your mom, did your mom like to cook?
Not my mom, no. Oh, okay. My grandma, she had her own restaurant. Oh, okay. And we have like a family cookbook from her, and
oh, sweet.
I mean, there's a lot of Crisco in there, but God
well,
love her.
I mean, hey, of course,
back. Yeah, who knew? She didn't know, but amazing cook, and so and just other people in my family let me to cook. Not my mom; it skipped a generation, I guess. It's in me.
Okay. Well, you're young enough that maybe you didn't grow up with what I remember growing up with was the nutritional guidelines of the four food groups.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Then somewhere along the history, it flipped into a pyramid. But
yeah.
Way back, it was just four food groups.
Yeah.
Did you learn that in your...
Yeah, more when we learned about the history of the... Yeah, so that would be more in like 70s and 80s.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was like, let me see if I can guess. Meat, bread, dairy, mm-hmm. vegetables or something?
Yeah, fruits and vegetables.
Like,
mm-hmm.
So kind of four food groups before they...
Bread was one of the food groups?
Well, or like, it was like... Yeah, grains and starches. Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Meat... Dairy, fruits and veggies in one mm-hmm. box, and then the breads in another. So like yeah. they say eat something in the out of the four food yeah. groups kind of vibe.
Yeah, which makes a lot of sense. I mean, it's pretty
it's not bad.
Pretty
sense.
Practical.
Yeah,
pretty
yeah,
practical.
But the grain was on the bottom.
Well, now when then the pyramid came along.
Yeah,
before it was just four food.
It was like
groups.
A square.
Yeah, it was a
four square.
Okay. Mm-hmm. It was a square, and also one day it's like, where did the pyramid come from?
Yeah.
So yeah, if you have any background on the history of where that pyramid came from.
What were they
from,
again for the?
Dan, am I right on this? Mr. Look It Up. I'm pretty sure the basic four. This I remember growing up that you have to
yeah.
eat out of
veggies.
The four food groups. So fruits and veggies were, I think, one square.
Oh, fruits and veggies. Okay, so yeah. I thought you left fruits out.
Yeah, fruits
so,
and okay. veggies, yeah, yeah. one square, and then meat.
Yeah, meat
and
meat and eggs, yeah.
yeah mm-hmm. Meat and whatever. And then you had the grainy bread stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had the dairy stuff, I think. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can kind of visualize that.
Here's the thing. You know, there was no such thing as a nutritionist or a...
dietitian.
Well, I've never heard the other one. The
dietitian.
You had a different word. Dietecture or
dietitian. Dietetics. That's
dietetics.
Like the science
oh,
of yeah. That's like the science. Yeah, like the training to become a dietitian. Mm-hmm.
I mean, in the it's so weird that we live in a world that you need.
I know. I've said that before. I'm like, I wish my job wasn't a thing.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but I mean, in the 70s and 80s, there were certainly dietitians. But, yeah, I mean, a few hundred years ago, it wouldn't have been. But there's always been, you know, healers. There's always been, you know, like wise women and medicine, you know, medicine workers and people who worked on healing and knew about, you know, held the... that traditional knowledge of what foods and herbs helped heal people.
Yeah,
I think that's always
yeah.
been a thing. And, you know, even
but
in,
usually it's handed down families you just knew, right?
Yeah.
And the world has gotten so complicated. You go to the store, you can literally buy a milk jug and it's not real. Like or you can go buy fake stuff.
Yeah.
Right? It looks like that, tastes like that, but it isn't that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's much more complicated now.
Yeah, I mean, it's extremely complicated. Yeah. Let's go to co-op. But.
I did have Dan look up the four food groups, and it was that. Bread and cereals was one. Fruits and veggies is one.
Yeah.
Milk was one, and meat was one, in that basic sense.
Which is probably at the time, useful for people, because they're like, okay, I need to, if I get some of each group, I'll probably be good, which isn't false. But then, in 1991, the original food guide pyramid was put up by the USDA, and there was some tweaks made to it. And so the one that we probably are most familiar with came out in 1992.
Okay.
Based on the dietary guidelines.
Which the bottom was, or the base, right?
The base.
That's what they called it.
Mm-hmm.
What you're supposed to have the most of is?
Was like,
grains.
Breads and grains. Mm-hmm. And that was, that was the base, 6 to 11 servings.
So in our world, back in the 70s, that was...
It's a pretty wide range, yeah.
Yeah. Cereal. Captain Crunch.
Yeah, that was one of the...
Sugar
big,
Bear.
Yeah, one of the big faults with that pyramid. I mean, there's many, but I would say the biggest one being it was very unclear to people that... the quality of the food mattered. So really this was all about quantity and what to have more of and what to have less of, which can be very helpful. But up until there were some revisions in the food pyramid, which we'll talk about, but the quality of those foods wasn't really discussed or emphasized, especially in the graphic. So the dietary guidelines are a document, many page document that comes out that the USDA puts out every 5 years. It's like the, it covers a 5-year span. And to accompany that is a graphic. And at that time was the the original food guide pyramid that kind of puts those guidelines into a visual form for people to kind of wrap your mm-hmm. head around. But most people, most consumers at least, are not going to be reading the whole dietary guidelines, just looking at the graphic. Right. So, and if you look at that, there's no, you know, you can't tell that whole grains should be emphasized, or that, you know, that refined, you know, refined ultra processed grains, you know, shouldn't be the, you shouldn't be getting 11 servings of that a day, you know, so that it's very difficult to look at that and see how like nutrient density or quality matters. It's just like, oh, okay, I should be getting most of this. So people were really thinking that, oh, I should be getting a lot of these foods. And not that those, you know, we need carbohydrates, but there's, you know, there was no nuance.
mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was grain and breads, meat, mm-hmm. meat and dairy.
No, fruits and vegetables were next on the tier.
Oh, they were.
One side was fruit, one side was vegetables. So 3 to 5 servings of vegetables, 2 to 3 servings of fruits. And then the next tier was meat and proteins, and the other side and dairy. And then the top was fats and oils.
Fats and oils and was sugar.
And sweets and sugars and oils, yeah. So we're all in the top of the pyramid as to use sparingly.
Sweets, sugars, oils, use sparingly. That's how it was worded on the...
Yes, yeah, so that's what it says, which is, again, like, I understand the, you know, desire to put out a graphic to help make it simpler, and that the layperson could kind of understand the guidelines without having to read the whole document. But use sparingly is kind of like, well, what does that mean? You know, it was not very specific, and so
right, because my sparingly might be different than yours. Anyway.
Yeah, yeah, and you're like, well, do I measure? How do you measure sparingly? And so that's, I mean, that's one thing that makes nutrition complicated is everybody has a different understanding.
Well, and again, why do we need it? The only reason we need it is in my perspective is because we have poisons out there that are disguised as food, you know. Like,
why do we need what?
Why do we need a pyramid? It was. I guarantee you, people 1,000 years ago didn't need a pyramid. They knew that they ate
the pyramids.
There you go. I mean, nobody needed a pyramid. Growing up in all these countries for years, you ate real food. You didn't have the chemical input. You didn't have the manipulation of the money behind it,
sure.
behind food, you know, the food industry.
Right. I get that. I have a question, though. Like, do other countries, you know, have...
Other countries have dietary guidelines,
This is America's way of giving a graphic.
But this, you know, this really came about because of the rise in chronic disease in the United States. And so, there's a twofold thing about this. These guidelines and the accompanying, you know, pyramid or whatever graphic they're using, is that, yes, it's for the education of the general population to help with the rise in chronic illness, which it has not done, spoiler alert, since 1992, chronic illness has gone up, but I don't think it's necessarily because of the food pyramid, but at least not directly. But the other thing about the dietary guidelines is that they do, there is some teeth to them, because they influence directly certain policies around what can be served in anywhere that gets government funding. So like public school lunches and things
Absolutely.
Like that. So it does have some direct impact on those programs, anything that has federal funding. So yes,
hospitals.
There's this graphic, but yeah, like hospitals, schools, like food assistance programs, things that are feeding the elderly, prisons, you know, those kinds of things. So
yeah, it's huge. It's huge in the form of the mentality and the subconsciousness of children growing up.
Yeah.
You know, that to me is like, again, we had our parents, again, I grew up in the 70s, when that transition happened from real food mm-hmm. to boxed food, including cereals. And we were literally dipping the milk out of the tank of our neighbor's milk and then pouring it on Captain Crunch.
Yeah. Well, there's some balance for you.
Yeah. Boy, it's just like it's eating out of our garden at that time was still not chemicalized. It started happening when I was about 5 or 6, 7 when,
you know, it's interesting. Paul often references his roots on the show, which is a beautiful reference because he grew up on a farm and watched the farm.
I grew up on an organic farm until I was probably about 4 or 5 when it fully changed into.
Yeah. But I'm thinking how your mom was really, you always said, her says mom was really upset when they put pop machines in schools. But yet you're eating boxed cereal, which kind of doesn't match her.
No, she hated that too.
Hated it?
Oh. Yeah. Well, we'd go get our own, or we would we'd keep it in our room.
But you also tell me like that's his comfort thing. Like he said, I'd sit down and have your bowl of cereal with your mom at night before bed. That was your comfort food.
Yeah,
to this day, it's his comfort food.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Except he buys organic.
Yeah. I think there could be worse comfort food.
There's something been that, like, that was her one thing she allowed. Like,
maybe something like
she
that.
Wouldn't do anything out of a can. And you know, it was like, what's the one? Helper?
Hamburger Helper.
Oh, my God. Hamburger Helper. She hated that one.
She hated Hamburger Helper?
What's that?
She didn't want to throw a little box mix of spices
friendly glove?
In the van.
Yeah. I mean, to them at that time, being a mom at home with seven kids. You know, that was their job. And right. Like all of a sudden, here it is.
Hamburger Helper
yeah.
stepping
in. You made my job easier, of course. I mean, yeah. Who wouldn't want that?
Well,
that makes sense.
In her world, that was like, you know, and she wasn't that great of a cook. And so I think it had some competition that people really liked it, tasted it. So she burnt everything. And, you know, like this one was like, ooh, that's got some taste to it, you know.
Of course she burned everything. Seven kids were trying to talk to her the whole time she was cooking.
And running a farm. So I want to reflect back, since we're kind of doing a little history peek here. So you mentioned that the pyramid came into play in 1991. You mentioned it started maybe because chronic disease was developing.
Yeah.
But yeah, growing up in the 70s, as I did too, you know, like when Kraft spaghetti in a box came out, I mean, that was like a staple in our house. Mom's like, get the box, macaroni and cheese, all these TV dinners. And it was this whole era, which if we want to really dig into this, about, you know, women don't need to be at home cooking. Sure. They should be in the workforce, which, you know, has differing opinions about how that affected the family nucleus, how it affected, you know, let's do fast food things because, you know, mom doesn't have time to cook. Now she's out of the house working and nobody's cooking at home.
There certainly could be no debate about how that change was one of the major shifts in our food system because someone has to be cooking or the food has to be made.
Someone has to make it.
So if two people are working, again, you know, this is no judgment. It's facts. It's like, okay, if two people are working, someone else is going to have to be doing the food preparation. So it's going to be either in the form of someone at a factory or someone at a restaurant.
Right.
You know, so it's
either you're grabbing food.
So that was a big change. So there was the advent of those highly processed foods because they had to be made, you know,
right.
and convenience and speed were the name of the game because you get home from work at 5 and dinner needs to be made pretty quickly after that if you got kids, you know. So that's really when the big shift happened. And just with technology, they were able to make so many different things. And even when, you know, in the 50s, that things really started because of the shift in kind of technological advancements. And so even people who are quote-unquote housewives, you know, stay-at-home moms or whatever, they were already starting to use those products because it promised ease and convenience in your life would be easier.
Right.
And you wouldn't have to spend so much time in the kitchen. But it's like the time has to come from somewhere. If it's not going to be at home, it's going to be in a factory or at a restaurant. Like it's going to come from somewhere. So food has, you know, food takes time to make.
And then you're saying also, so you think of that. So now we have these box goods and then these different preservatives in there and just all these different things. Like I know after World War II, that's how the whole fertilizing scene where they started dumping all that on our land. They had all this extra gross stuff left. Oh, let's put on the land. Oh, great idea. Not. And I'm just wondering, too, if, you know, like this technological shift that happened in the 50s and 60s that got us to this place. And then now by the 90s, you're like, ooh, we're getting really a lot of diseases.
Yeah.
We got to teach people how to eat because we kind of send them down the path of, just like with, we love this story, Paul, too. Oh, moms, don't nurse your babies. Use formula. Take the greatest thing that ever was made for a human and stop giving it to that baby, the perfect food, and give them some stuff out of a can or something.
Yeah.
Like that whole shift, the Nestle Corporation, like we just go on and on about this food thing.
Yeah.
Well, here's the formula of health. Click on 91.9, the electronic world that has saved us from the boring world of nature. Thank you, WDRT, for bringing us to the light. Just tune in, and you will find the inner peace within.
I don't know if Hall needs more coffee or less coffee, yeah. So I'm not quite sure where his mind is this morning.
I need some food to go with it.
Yeah. Okay. But on that note, I just want to say, if you're just joining us, Laura Pohl Mathis is our guest today. She's a dietitian and locally leads the Weston Price Foundation and has committed her life to teaching people about food and the good food and what's good and what's bad. So we're just diving in here. Had a little history lesson, walked down that path for the first part of the hour and kind of got to where, like, okay, we have this food pyramid. It was made in the 90s. And now we're moving into the 21st century in our history story.
Well, here's one of the things. Again, to me, most of this is manipulated. This pyramid was not brought out to teach us how to eat and to be healthy. This was manipulated by the Food and Drug Administration, which is in the same sentence.
That's have a fact check on
insane.
That.
Insane. I mean, that alone is insane, that we have Food and Drug Administration in our government to show us how to be healthy. That the shift that happened, you know, and maybe it happened, you know, a lot sooner than back, that in the industrial food complex, the, you know, way, way back when things shifted.
What's way back when?
Well,
the 40s,
like,
it, the 50s,
like the industrial the revolution, you know, it's like all this stuff came out and then it started getting into our foods. It leaked into your foods. After World War II, what are you going to do with all this stuff? Let's put it into the fertilizer and throw it into the food.
We could rabbit hole it left and right.
Yeah. A lot of all those things that came about in those few decades where so much change happened, where they're all promises of better living through science, right?
Or lies. Or lies.
But but those are the promises, but they obviously have not come to fruition. I mean, I would say I think it's both. I think some of the food guide pyramid did come out for, you know, nutrition policy and feeding the underserved and educating people, but certainly they are influenced by lobbyists. Mm-hmm. And special interest groups. And so is the one today. I mean, I've heard some criticism of the new one, which we'll start talking about, but the new pyramid that just came out a few weeks ago is also influenced by lobbyists. Everything in the government that is influenced by lobbyists. So it's, you know, that's why you always take it with a grain of salt.
Okay, so to compare it, the word is on the street that the pyramid has been flipped.
Right? Sure, yeah.
So just so our listeners can visualize it with us as we talk. So basically that means flipped at the top of the pyramid now.
Yeah.
Now help me with that.
Yeah. So now it's kind of, they made it an upside down.
No, the base is the most important going up.
Yeah, but they made the top part, they made an upside down pyramid. I think the main reason they did that, I think, is just as more of like an expression of like, hey, we're flipping things upside down. I think that it's a little bit like, hey, we're going to get radical with it. I think that's the main reason that the upside down pyramid is like, it grabbed people's attention. People are talking about it. Nobody has been talking about the USDA dietary guidelines for
years.
I mean, people talk about nutrition, but no one's like, get the dietary guidelines. I mean, unless you're in, you know, the dietetics
business,
world.
Right.
Yeah. But so I think that was a big thing, was like making
kind of
this new graphic.
Like,
grab people's attention, be like, hey, we're the old way is out. We're flipping things upside down. So it's a little bit kind of silly to have done it, but it also worked because people are talking about it. You know,
we're talking about it.
We're talking about
your food, your school foods are based on it.
Yep.
Okay, so let's talk about, can you give us then the new recommendations of servings?
So the new pyramid, as they're calling it, is really only has three sections. If you go to the government website that really breaks it down, which is realfood.gov, which is actually a very slick little website they've got.
I like that.
And I also never thought in all my years I would see a .gov that was realfood.gov. So there's a good thing coming out of it. So if you go to that, it's like the official website of this pyramid that breaks it all down. But there's really three sections. The top is broken into two equal parts. So if you can envision a pyramid that's like, there's the pointy part on the bottom and then the base, which is on the top. It's two sections, which is protein, dairy, and healthy fats. That's one section. The other half of that big wide top base is fruits and vegetables, which they say, you know, is still kind of the like three or so servings of vegetables and two servings of fruits. There's, you know, it's a range, but that's approximate. For the protein, they're saying this was the big change. That one of the biggest changes, other than like the visual graphic, is the recommendations for proteins have changed. So, whereas in the 1992 pyramid, it was like third tier. This is, you know, a really big emphasis on protein. And I think, again, part of it is the like just trying to change the people's kind of perception of their protein needs and, you know, de-villainizing these animal foods. I think that's a big part of it. So the in the actual literature that they put out, these kind of documents to accompany the pyramid, they're saying basically double the RDA, so the recommended daily allowance that the USDA puts out. Up until now, well, it's still the same RDA, but is 0.8 grams per kilogram of body weight. So not that most people don't know their weight in kilograms.
Right.
So that's another way they're kind of really, it's a little bit muddled and convoluted for the average person to read dietary guidelines. You're like, okay, I don't know my
weight.
Can
you transcribe that into pounds for the unknowing audience?
So let's see, that would be...
Which is me, by the way.
Yeah, no. Yeah, most people don't. So it's...
So 0.8 grams per kilogram.
It's like less than, you know, it's like, I would say half a gram per pound or so. You know, I don't have the exact calculation right now.
Okay.
But it's, you know, I would say it's about half your body weight, which the R... And so you, if you read any criticisms of this new pyramid, they're like, it's way too much protein because they've essentially recommended doubling that.
Okay.
People like, that's way too much protein. Nobody's inadequate in protein in the United States. And that's mostly true. I mean, there's certainly like food
insecurity. Nobody's inadequate?
Yeah. I mean, that's true if you're talking about just like, you know, the average person, but there's food insecurity. There's certainly that happens in the elderly and in vegan populations. And, you know, if there's eating disorders, anything like that, yes, we see protein deficiency. But the average person, no, isn't protein deficient if you're just looking at the RDA.
Okay.
Most people are getting 0.8 grams per kilogram of body weight.
Okay.
However, that number came only from studies that were looking at how to prevent a like an extreme deficiency,
okay.
Like in causing a negative nitrogen balance. So, yes, most people aren't extremely deficient, but that number is not related to any long-term health markers. It's not related to, you know, body composition, you know, building muscle or bone, which all both need protein. It's not related to kind of long-term health effects like blood sugar management, you know, heart disease, you know, any of these things that getting more protein can help, you know, kind of these chronic disease markers. It's not related to that. So they, these new dietary guidelines doubled that. And because there is quite a bit of research that says getting more than the RDA can, you know, has a positive effect on long-term health outcomes.
That's why they suggest a double.
Yeah. So now it's between 1.2 to 1.6 grams per kilogram per day. So doubling at the high end of your needs.
I'd say let's not get into the real details of it.
Well, I did like that, actually, because this is a big... stick point you're saying.
Go look it up.
Yeah.
I'm talking about, let's get into where it came from in the beginning, like getting into a more of a, like how did it get created in the first place to where...
This new pyramid?
Yeah, no, well, when you put grains on top, like that's the number one, or the base.
Yeah.
Like this is where, you know, the whole process we talked before we even started the show... was the Winston Price
Weston
Foundation.
Weston Price Foundation.
Well, you know, like that came about because of the manipulation of our food system in the first place.
Well, I think what you're about to say is Weston Price does encourage lots of healthy animal products.
Yes.
So why did it come about from... You're saying Weston Price Foundation started because he saw chronic disease and said, why are people sick and other people aren't sick?
The Weston Price Foundation started like in the 90s, but Weston Price himself was a dentist in the 30s who started, he traveled the whole world because he saw in his practice in Cleveland, he saw cavities and he's like, and occlusion, which is like crowded teeth. And he's like, my family's been a dentist. I've been a dentist for years, I've never seen these. And all of a sudden, you know, he'd see a cavity every once in a while, and all of a sudden, these people are getting teeth pulled out of their head left and right. And he's like, what is going on? And kids, teeth rotting out, and people needing braces, which they never needed before. And he's like, what is going on? And he's like, I think it's about the nutrition. So he traveled the world to find groups of people who are isolated from modern, what he called modernized foods, so processed foods. And his intent was to study their dental health. And he studied indigenous people all over the world on almost every continent, and every different type, like the Arctic and the tropics, and, you know, native people who are native to the Americas, all Europe, everywhere. The only place he wasn't able to go were certain parts of Asia, unfortunately, because that would have been really cool. But anyway, so he studied all of them and looked at, I mean, he took samples of the food back to his lab and was looking at nutrient content. And he was like, and he was comparing the nutritional intake of these groups with their relatives, because at the time people were like, oh, it's genetic. And he was like, it's not genetic, because I've seen, you know, people in the same family in my dental practice. It's not genetic. And he was comparing health outcomes in people in isolated indigenous tribes to their relatives who had moved to places that had access to modernized foods, refined foods, like refined flours, refined sugars, canned foods, things like that, and refined oils.
Fatless foods, right? I mean, they're taking out the fat.
Not necessarily in the 30s yet. Yeah, it was just kind of starting, but there were more refined vegetable oils for sure because they were cheap and shelf stable. Yeah. And he basically was like, this is not genetics. This is nutrition. And he would bring nutrient dense foods to these people who had started to have issues with their dental health, cavities, crowding, and he was healing cavities and through, he was giving them to children. He was doing research in children and healing their health. But what he also found was these groups that were isolated were almost immune to tuberculosis, which was wiping out people all over the place in the 30s. And so he was like, oh, it's not just dental health. It's their overall health. They're living longer. They're having easy births. They're having like less infant mortality. They're having immunity to tuberculosis, which was a huge, you know, scare at the time in comparison to people in modernized worlds, including people who are related to the people in isolated tribes. So that's where it was so
Didn't he find the people that had no cavities and they were in the 50s, 60s, 70s?
And they didn't have toothbrush.
They didn't have any fluoride. You know, this is what I am like fired up about.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care about the pyramid. You know, it's like, who gives a crap?
You
know,
well, like, why did you invite her on the show?
Because this is the political, money industry that has created America as the sickest Western country in the world. This is what it is. It's like some people that have not even thought that maybe I've been manipulated into eating what I'm eating. Maybe I've been manipulated into thinking what I'm thinking. Maybe that's why I became a vegetarian, is because of the villainization of real food and the push of fast and fake food into our world, and to be dependent on the medical pharmaceutical mafia, you know, like or the pharmaceutical food industry, like this is why we've had to make this major shift. This is just the, you know, it's a symbolization of we are taking it no more. That's what it means to me. I mean, this means nothing to me. The actual triangle.
Well, we're not saying the triangle.
I know, but get into why this happened. This is to me the whole point is we are waking up to being manipulated for the last, you know, I mean, it could be hundreds of years. But for sure, in the food industry, what's being sprayed on our field, what's been, you know, the box of a hamburger helper that came into our house. You know, these things have just continued to get worse to where food flavoring was, you know, so huge. Why do McDonald's French fries taste so good? You know, there's a whole article on that you can look up. And it's like it's a pure food industry that's been tainted And now, finally, we're shifting to like, okay, yeah, we are making ourselves sick.
Yeah.
And we can't depend on the health drug industrial complex. You know, that's really what, sure. you know, pharmaceutical, the health so-called, drug administration is like drug administration in our government. That to me is sick.
So right there, back to the topic at hand. So yeah, so our current Secretary of Health and Human Services said when if I get the position, I want to help shift the health of our children.
Yeah.
Right? Because we have all this chronic illness with children, and this is a bold step to say, we're turning this around.
Yeah, I think exactly. Down. Yeah, it's a statement for sure. It's right. like, you know, I have plenty of criticisms of this pyramid and all the pyramids, and...
I do too.
However, yeah. I will say, like, it is, you know, the idea that it's saying, eat real food is a new concept. I mean, there's been hints at that in other iterations of this, because this is not the second pyramid. This is actually the fourth different real iteration that we've had for a visual for the dietary guidelines. But I would say this is the emphasis on eat real foods. If you dig into what the dietary guidelines are saying to that go with the new pyramid, it mentions the gut microbiome. It mentions, wow. you know.
Oh,
it,
that's funny.
I was looking at it last night on the realfood.gov under where it says grains, because we didn't get to it yet. But the bottom of the pyramid, which is the smallest part now because it's flipped, is whole grains.
Which is huge. I say, yeah. do not eat
which
much
is like,
of that.
Which is right. like 2 to 4 servings a day, which honestly, again, 2 to 4 servings for like an athlete would not be enough. But who knows what a serving is? That's right. part of the problem with dietary guidelines that are like this. It's like, what's a serving? Yeah. Is it a bowl of pasta? Is it a slice of bread? Is it just, you know, like right. most people don't know what it's like to be like 2 to 4 servings. But it definitely is a more balanced approach than 6 to 11 servings. So, you know, being you don't need as many, but you certainly do need some, the literature on the effect of whole grains on things like cholesterol levels and, you know, digestive health is pretty robust. But it talks about
whole grains.
Eating whole grains.
It doesn't say eat white bread anymore.
Yeah, it doesn't say breads and cereals. Yeah, it says like avoid refined flours. It said sourdough bread in it as one of the options. I'm like, yes,
wow,
we're getting somewhere.
So that's huge. If they would really read that.
Yeah, it was like saying, you know, eating whole grains because it supports the gut microbiome, and you know that's my specialty is digestive health. And I'm like, all right, we're at least talking about it. It mentioned fermented foods. It mentioned all sorts of things.
Huge.
So.
Which are the old ways, Paul,
yes.
that we could say that the old ways, people right. would make their bread with sourdough, they would ferment yeah. their food, they would can their sauerkraut, yeah. they would do all these great yeah. things, and we just move so far away from that in society.
Yeah.
The fact that you're having to teach classes to people, it's yeah. amazing you're doing that, but it's funny we even have to.
Yeah, it's pretty
because
funny.
We had moved away and just went, I'm going to go to the store and get my processed box yeah. of
You brought
dinner.
It up earlier. We have people that help people or encourage them to breastfeed. You know, yeah. like, just think of the insanity of that.
That we need.
That we yeah. need people to teach young mothers that this is probably the best way to go.
Yeah.
And then to help them do that. Well, I mean, that used to happen naturally to help them nurse their first
baby. Of
course,
baby. Yeah. But it wasn't a career.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't a choice of like, oh, do I go, you know, I mean, how long did that happen? Like, it was wiped out within... Not that many years.
I don't
years.
Know the exact stats, but I know I wasn't nursed, and I was born in 1965.
Yeah, and
I
mean, the
nursed.
50s and 60s, there was, I mean, people were actively against it. I've heard stories of people saying, like, oh, my family members were encouraging me not to do it. They're
yes.
like, oh, don't do that.
But
you don't
why
want
would
like,
you want to do
yeah,
that?
Yeah, why would you want to do that?
When I learned about it in my life, as we was having our first child, it's like, oh, I went back and asked my mom. I said, why didn't you nurse me? And she started crying
and
said, they wouldn't let me. You know,
yeah.
it was just totally shame
yeah.
in that process. And this, you will never be shamed if you turn on WDRT 91.9. No way. You'll be celebrated and gifted with the opportunity to open your heart Thank you very much for tuning in.
Yes, our guest is Laura Pomathis, and if you want to talk to Laura, ask questions about all this great conversation, her website is restdigestandheal.com. Mm-hmm. Am I saying that right?
Yep.
Restdigestandheal.com. And I'm sure there's a lot of good information on her website, and she's available for questions if you have, because I don't know if we're going to get through everything in this hour.
No, we're not. Good. Again, details don't matter to me in this one. This is so huge that just what happened with, hopefully is happening in nursing, it's becoming normalized again,
right,
to be real, to be original, to be what nature was asked us to be.
Sure.
And this is what's happening to me. You know, you can politicize it, whatever you want. You can, but it is a wake-up call to we are no longer going to be industrialized when it comes to health.
Yeah,
you know, like this is like we're going to eat real food. Winston Price Foundation,
Weston.
Right? Weston Price, sorry, Winston, my friend who just died. God bless you.
Bless you.
Yeah, but Weston Price Foundation really is like, that was one of the ones, it's like, come on, we got to get back to what our pioneers did, you know, like it.
Yeah, and so, yeah, the Weston Price Foundation in the early 90s, like, basically took Weston Price's research from the early 20th century and was like, we have to get this out to the masses because you think the food was starting to get processed in the 30s.
Look at it now.
Look at it now in the 90s. I mean, we have been talking about, you know, the shift that happened when people stopped cooking and all that, you know, and when there's these convenience foods would start to be introduced. Those started gradually taking over. We'd use things here or there, you know, they'd be mixed in, like, you know, you're talking about, Paul. You'd have a few things, but you still had your raw milk, and you know, it started to kind of be peppered in, and then it kind of gradually increased to the point where that's the vast majority of what some people's diets were in the 90s. And we lost those skills to even, it's like, okay, I want to eat healthy. You look, even if you're going by the food pyramid, if you did that and just didn't eat processed foods, you'd be healthy because you'd be cooking, but people don't know how to cook. So like, nutrition knowledge is one thing, but then it's like, I don't know how to make foods. I've relied on processed foods for the past 20 years. You know, it's a big leap for people. So, you know, when the Weston Price Foundation started, their whole goal was to promote education about these, you know, traditional foods that people have been eating for a very long time and enjoying robust health. And not just that, but also how to make them and, you know, getting these, that's why there's chapters, because they want people to form, you know, small local groups where they can share knowledge and information and skills, because it's like, you know, this pyramid's great, but if somebody doesn't know how to cook, it's not going to do them diddly squat, because it's like, all right, I need to be eating meat and vegetables. It's like, okay, well, how do I cook a whole grain? How do I cook brown rice?
How do I make
versus
sourdough?
Like a, you know, yeah, opening a can of SpaghettiOs? It's so, I think the information can be really good, and there's a lot, like you said, like this is really revolutionary in terms of talking about real food, de-villainizing some of these foods like healthy fats and meats and whole fat dairy. That's a huge thing about this new pyramid. It says whole fat dairy.
Whole fat dairy. So I have a question about that. I saw some blurb somewhere saying that a few years ago, the government said, we're not going to let kids drink whole milk. We're going to have them skim milk only. And now they reverse that now, saying all the school lunches are going back to whole milk. Is that true?
Is that true. And that's probably my favorite things about this pyramid is that, again, it influences nutrition policy for these funded programs for many, many years, decades. You could only have either skim or 2% milk in schools.
And the point of that, because someone thought that that would help get our kids not obese anymore by taking fat out of your milk.
Yeah, that like the saturated fat, you know, contributes to heart disease and all this. And yes, there's research that says that, but there's also research that says it doesn't, which is one of the tricky things about nutrition research.
Yes, right.
There's something for every side. Right. But what we do know is that kids need fats for their growing brains. You know, if somebody was maybe watching their weight or something like that, reducing calorie intake through taking out some of the fat in their dairy products, sure, that could make sense for certain people, but definitely not for children with growing brains and bodies. Mm. And, you know, this demonization of saturated fat, especially when it's, you know, you're talking about whole foods here. It's like, well, not all the fat in milk is saturated fat, first of all, or in most foods. But, you know, except for coconut oil, which is almost exclusively saturated fat, but no, you know, people aren't really demonizing that.
Should they be demonizing?
No, no, but like, you know, people really demonize animal foods. It's like, well, you know, beef fat is a mixture of saturated and other fats. Mm-hmm. Dairy fat is certainly a mixture of saturated and other fats. So all that to say, now they are going to start allowing whole milk in schools, which is like so wonderful. I was so happy when
How about the next step, going to raw milk?
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
the way things are going.
Dan brought that up, but it's so true. It's like, okay, where did this start? And he brought back that it was actually where the industrialized milk world.
Yeah.
Be, you know, and things started to shift and change.
Okay, so now here's another question on top of that. You know, this thing about like, oh, we should just do lab meat and these man-made meats or whatever.
Yeah. The Impossible Burger.
Right.
There it is. He just brought it up.
The Impossible Burger.
The Impossible Whopper.
Well, what is it? What isn't
what that? Do you call a big lie? A Whopper.
Yeah.
What do you call a bigger lie? An Impossible Whopper.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think those sold very well. They probably don't even care anymore. But yeah, Whopper or the Impossible meat is it. That's not lab grown meat because it's like soy protein and a bunch of
that's actually a vegetable. Well, not vegetable, but aren't there some thoughts about lab grown meat,
taking some cells from an actual animal and then growing them in, you know,
instead of just having them outside in the pastures.
No way.
So Dan brought this up too. He was started in the 1800s. Were,
milk pasteurization.
Where it's shifted, and that's where the demonizing of breastfeeding started in, to where they wanted the kids to get cow milk instead of mom milk from. So I didn't realize.
And a big part of that
up.
Was from the Nestle Corporation.
Nestle just want to make some cash
because they then they got this dried milk from the milk industry and it fortified it and then made formula and they're like we could make a killing, and they really preyed on young mothers who didn't have that support, who were like, oh, this will be convenient. I can be unfettered.
Right.
But they also preyed on, Africa. They would like send it to impoverished countries in Africa and all over the world. And with, again, the promise of
freedom
and health and all these things. But of course, you know, none of those things live up to their promises.
Well, I mean, when you're in a poor country and you let your breasts dry up of the wonderful food that you have given to you by nature and depend on a can.
Yeah.
And if you have money to buy that formula, then what?
Yeah. And, you know, some people have problems with breastfeeding and need to supplement with that. And that is totally great. But the insidious part is that women who are perfectly healthy and able to do it were told that they shouldn't or didn't need to, and that it was just as good. And, you know, I think it can be a total blessing if someone's had a mastectomy whatever, or they're hospitalized or have to take a medication or something. And again, we have these technologies that can be great amendments when we need them.
When we need them, right, for crisis.
But if you're told that it's just as good and, oh, don't be doing that, it's weird or dirty or... kind of peasant. It's like, oh, we have the technology. Why would you do that? That's the old way.
Right.
Or anything, whatever lie, that's when it's... And, it's, you know, that's happened with breastfeeding, but it's also happened with food in general. It's like, why would you cook?
Yeah. Right.
You're slaving away in the kitchen all day. It's like, what a joy to make a nutritious meal for your family.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, what better work is there? And you can get your kids involved in cooking and they can love it. And what joy to grow your own food. It's like, oh, you don't want to be out there digging in the dirt. You know, I think there's this kind of like these real skills, these things that we've done that make us human and make us real, that we've done forever and ever and ever, are kind of looked down upon. Like, why would you want to do that? It's like, it's seen as backwards. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm like, I want to stay home and cook for my family. It's not because I'm some, you know, you can label it whatever you want, you know.
Right.
The derogatory term now would be trad wife. But, you know, you're
what
like...
What is it called?
Trad wife. It's, I mean, it's like a derogatory term.
Traditional
really,
wife?
Yeah. That use, and people really lean into it and it gets, you know, it can get weird. But like the idea that like you'd want to, you know, provide for your family in that way. You'd want to work at home with making nutritious food so your kids are healthy. Like, that's seen as crazy. It's right. Like, you know, so, and again, if you don't want to do that, that's fine too. But it's like you, to be able to have the choice between those two things is beautiful. Mm-hmm. But, you know, to look down on someone because, you know, or to just the mindset of like, who would want to do that? It's like,
it's well, people might want to.
Yeah. And it's like, well, someone's got to cook the food. So,
right.
So we,
you know,
McDonald's.
So we only have, not, I don't think we have that many minutes. So many, many minutes we got. 9 minutes. So let's actually have some fun with this pyramid now that I kiboshed it. Okay. So, what does it mean health wise? And like maybe all three of us can bring in there to flip those grains and bring in the, you know, the meat, the dairy, and you know, that world back into our world. Like, unvillainize that, unvillainize all of them. But like that flip, what does it mean?
Is people are not saying, well, if I eat donuts and grilled cheese, I don't know, I'm trying to think of only bready things, that I'm being healthy. But it's flipping it, saying you actually need protein.
Yeah, like, yeah. That's the base of your meals. When you're planning your meal, every meal should include a good source of protein, and every meal or snack, and a fruit or vegetable. And, you know, you should have several servings of dairy throughout the day and include healthy fats with all your meals. And what that's really going to do is help us keep our blood sugar balanced and keep obesity down, and all sorts of other health longevity health outcomes. But, you know, by putting it in the emphasis, like, you know, in a portion of the pyramid, it's saying these are what you should have. This should be the base of your diet, and you know, include these whole grains as like a side dish, instead of like the majority of your, you know, your intake. You know, I mean, carbohydrates are the majority of your calorie intake,
right?
But I think, and that's how your what your
that
body
can
needs
come through vegetables too.
Yeah,
right?
But that can it can come through fruits and vegetables and things like that. But I think again, this visual of being like these aren't your main food, like don't plan your meals around this.
Mm-hmm.
Plan your meals around proteins and produce, and you know, de-villainize healthy fats and whole fat dairy. That's, you know, that's going to change a lot for people. If they just, if you're going to start to get back to cooking and making your own food, okay, what am I going to make? Start with what's my protein going to be? What vegetable am I going to use? I think that's...
And that used to be kind of... Like, I remember my mom was not an amazing cook. She had, like, a certain, you know, chicken and corn, beef and beans and pork and carrots. And there's, like... And then she'd always have potatoes probably with it kind of vibe, right? We never had salads or anything like that. But it's just kind of these basic, like, Friday fish. And then, you know, we'd get a box of the spaghetti. And but so, that, you know, people kind of knew some of that. I think what I'm trying to get here, that... I like the shift in the fact that, again, bringing back to realfood.gov is making people think twice about, you know, reading labels probably. Like, if you're 12, 15, 20 ingredients on that box, that's not maybe food.
Yeah.
Right? I'm sure maybe it discusses that in the guidelines. I don't know if it – I haven't read it all. I looked at the website briefly to try to feel it out. But that idea, like, you don't need these processed things.
Yeah.
Right? And often – you know, grainy things. I don't know. I'm thinking like muffins in a box, you know, like I made some the other day and it was awful. Remember that? I was trying to use something up on my shelf and we're like, there's no substance in this bread. Mm-hmm. It was like the weirdest white flour processed.
Yeah.
I don't even know where it came on my shelf and all. I'm embarrassed it was there, but it was, and it was crazy compared to making a good old banana bread with, you know, more substance.
Yeah.
Okay. So I, you know, if you go on to a cleanse, like you, a veggie cleanse, a fruit cleanse, might do a juice fast, or it might even get a carnivore diet. I might do that for a bit too. You know, like, do you ever say, I'm going to go cleanse myself and do all grains?
No.
You know, You know, like I'm just going. I'm just going to eat bread.
Let me eat bread.
I mean, number one, you plug up eventually. you'd have to.
Is that your point? Like you're saying, we don't really need much of that. Like, but you could live on vegetables alone for a while.
That common sense. You don't have to know anything. But nobody's going to go on a bread cleanse and think you're going to come out at the other end after 21 days and be doing really good. You might go on a fast.
Yeah.
You know, and you might do some
right. They're a side dish or they're an accompaniment to a meal. And again, that's why these new guidelines are so great, because there is so much nuance. It's like bread's not bad, but there's a like Wonder Bread and the sourdough bread I make with grains that I grind myself are two different,
totally
foods.
Different things. Right.
And that's I think these guidelines are really being like there's. Making that distinction is going to be huge.
Yeah, it's a quality, like you said in the beginning.
It's a quality issue, you know. Yeah. Like, it's not just quantity.
Does it
talk
about organic compared to non-organic in there?
I don't know. I can't quite remember.
I have to read through too.
But I will say, I mean, we're talking about the impact that like lobbyists and special interest groups have. This one is influenced by that. So they all are. Right. But just, you know, the meat industry and dairy industry will be happy with this one.
Right.
And
the
grain industry less so, but and the sugar industry less so, but somebody's always going to be upset.
We never said it was in the middle. You said it's three sections.
So it's protein, like dairy, the fruit, top, and veggies. The top is like cut in half
right, with
vertically. And then there's just one bottom section. It's like in thirds.
Oh, okay. So there's not like a bunch of, okay.
Yeah, so it's trying to simplify it like, basically saying every meal should have a protein, whether, you know, meat, dairy, and should have a healthy fat, and every meal should have fruits and vegetables. And then sometimes you'll have these whole grains. Okay. Or maybe they're just less prominent in the meal. But I think, you know, in terms of how this affects nutrition policy, again, that means that school lunches are going to have less ultra-processed foods, too.
Yes.
So it'll be interesting to see how that actually plays out.
Into the budget, too, because good food is often more expensive.
And they're going to have to start cooking, and most schools aren't cooking, you know, food. They're reheating things. And so we'll see how that
And again, the long-term effect we're looking for here is that our children in the years to come will be healthier.
Yeah.
And
we can turn the ship around
with obesity rates, with chronic disease rates. That's the goal. Right. Yeah. We wanna get that turned around.
Right.
And it's gonna take some changes. And that's what we're in the start of here. So
And thinking about it as a generational thing, like the last few generations have kind of seen the peak of chronic illness. I mean, 90% of our healthcare spending is on chronic illness.
Crazy.
And we can help people who are in those generations to get healthier. But yeah, like you said, that really this is going to be a gradual shift to like getting our kids healthy. So hopefully we can see a change in all these statistics.
What's that? Well, I'm excited because it is, to me, it's exposing the manipulation of the food industry and our health chemical industry, you know, like I suppose that we're getting healthy by taking all these pills, you know, like maybe we can take less of them through the years. And one of the things I think they're thinking about is getting advertising for pharmaceuticals off the screen.
That was another touch of things to change. So
so they've been working on a lot of things over there.
Get the food dyes out.
Now we just gotta get him to change the raw milk laws and we'll be good.
We're getting there, right?
Well, and then also
and our regenerative farming has been talked about and trying to send money that way. So I just like the shift in realizing the value of our soil, the value of real food. Again, as we're wrapping up this hour, you can go to realfood.gov and study this document.
Villainization. Go ahead.
I just want to say, we're down to 1 minute. I just want to say again, thank you, Laura, for being with us. And again, Laura's website is restdigestandheal.com. If you have questions about all these great topics we've been talking about, again, restdigestandheal.com.
And realfood.com.
And realfood.org is the
.gov.
Government.
Mm-hmm.
Realfood.gov.
Yeah.
Did I say org? Realfood.gov. We take control of our health that way through what we put in our body. So
that's awesome. And then, you know, the devilization of oil and bringing that back on the plate. So I'm super excited.
Yes. Thank you very much again, everyone, for listening today. Have a great day.